Well, as we've been reporting, the supply of COVID-19 vaccine is starting to outstrip demand in some places around the country. North Carolina, Arkansas, Connecticut, and South Carolina have cut back on new deliveries because they have more doses than they can use. And the average number of new doses administered has fallen almost 50% since the peak in mid-April. Let's bring in Derek Thompson. He's a staff writer at The Atlantic. Hey, Derek, welcome back.
Good to be here. Thank you.
And you've been writing about the vaccination slowdown. You point out that it started on April 13th. That's the day the FDA recommended a pause on the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. Do you see a connection?
I think if you're wondering about the timing of the decline in vaccinations, it is awfully curious and coincidental that this decline started on the very day that U.S. health officials warned about the Johnson & Johnson vaccines. By the way, they recommended a pause, then 10 days later, they said that they thought that given the risks of the virus itself, that it was probably worth taking the vaccine for most people. So yeah, I do see a connection, especially in terms of the timing. The bigger question, though, is why vaccinations continue to plummet. They didn't just fall for a week or 2 weeks. You know, they've fallen for about a month. You know, it's May 10th right now, so that's about a month after the April 13 decline. So I do think that something else might be going on here.
Before we move on to that, I just want to stick with this J&J storyline for a minute. Even though the risk of getting a blood clot after taking that vaccine is very low, do you think that some people did get a message that it was somehow dangerous?
Yeah, I do, for two reasons. First, looking at the data, and second, listening to the anecdotes. So first, if you look at the data, if you look at a graph of vaccinations per day in this country, the decline literally starts on the very day that the FDA and CDC recommended a pause. So it does seem like the timing has to be related to the Johnson & Johnson shots. And then there's the anecdotes. Across the country, health clinics have said that there's a lot of patients who were uniquely excited about the one-shot regimen of Johnson & Johnson. Maybe they were afraid of needles, or they were concerned about mRNA technology. For whatever reason, they were into the J&J shots, and a lot of that enthusiasm seems to have evaporated when the CDC and FDA recommended the pause.
You write that there is a difference in vaccine supply and demand depending on whether you live in a traditionally red state or a blue state. Explain what's going on there.
Well, one thing that we've seen in the polling going back several months is that the single variable that most predicts whether you are pro-vaccine or vaccine skeptical, vaccine hesitant, it's not education, it's not ethnicity, it's politics. Democrats have always been more eager to get these shots than Republicans. And right now, if you look at the 20 states where the daily rate of first doses is higher than the national average, all 20 of those states voted for Joe Biden in last year's election. Meanwhile, the 13 states where vaccination rates are not only below average, but also where fewer than half the population has a shot, so the places that are really falling behind, 12 of those 13 states, all but Georgia, voted for Trump in November. So you see both in the polling and in the real world data that the most important dividing line when it comes to who's getting these shots and who's not getting these shots is politics.
And that's to your earlier point that this, you know, that in particular had nothing to do most likely with the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. That's just plain hesitancy.
That's right. I think there's a wall of vaccine hesitancy that we were going to hit in April or maybe in early May, no matter what. And I think in the big picture, this is what happened. The Johnson & Johnson vaccines surged into the market. They absorbed a lot of the low-hanging demand for shots. And when the FDA and CDC recommended a pause, the remaining population was a lot less keen to get the shot. So what happened is first you had the Johnson & Johnson shots come out of the market. You saw a little bit of a decline. And then that decline kept going because all that low-hanging fruit of vaccine-eager Americans had been plucked. So right now we're dealing with a problem where demand is falling below supply. That's a problem we need to fix, and not only in persuasion in doctors' offices, but maybe in terms of policy, you know, giving people right, you know, free beers, free cash for shots. I think that might be a really important policy going forward.
Well, let's talk about that, because now we're hearing public health officials say that essentially herd immunity may not be attainable at this rate. So what do you think of those efforts to get people to come out, to shed that hesitancy or that reluctancy? Is paying them the answer?
In the big picture, I think a lot of individuals, are doing a cost-benefit analysis, a very personal cost-benefit analysis. They are weighing their feelings about the pandemic against their feelings about the shots. And one way to nudge a cost-benefit analysis is to up the benefits. Maybe that means getting people into bars so that they see vaccine shots as something that they can get with actual shots of whiskey or vodka. It seems less like a pharmaceutical invention and more just like a social interaction. Or maybe we should even start paying 16 to 35-year-olds to get vaccinated, like $100. That's what West Virginia is doing. I think we need to get creative here.
Derek Thompson, staff writer at The Atlantic. Thanks as always.
Thank you.